Hey guys, welcome back to Mindset Managed with me, SR Crawford. Today I wanted to talk about advice that I'd give my past self. So I turned 25 this week, and so I've been thinking about a lot of things about life, about things that I've been through, things that have shaped me, things I've yet to experience, all of the above. And I saw this little infographic thing on Pinterest that took my attention and kind of sparked the idea for this podcast today. So the picture that I saw was, it was a quote by Mark Epstein, which says, "It's one of my theories that when people give you advice, they're really just talking to themselves in the past." And that was really interesting to me because I think that, yeah, that's totally right. A lot of us give advice to each other, of course, trying to help each other out. But it often comes from a place of, you know, what we've experienced or what we would do in that situation. And it's very hard to detach yourself from that discussion. I can only give you advice from my own experiences, from my own knowledge, from my own learning, and from what I would do. That's why people come to me for certain things, but go to my brother for other things, or go to my partner for other things, because different people have different experiences, different knowledge, and a different perspective, basically, to give you. Not everyone will give you the same advice when you ask them the same question. And that's because, yes, it's all coming from that own person's perspective. And also, yeah, this quote's right. We are speaking to ourselves. We're often telling ourselves what we would have done or what we would like to have done. Or, you know, what the confident, most brave, most amazing version of ourselves would do or would say to ourselves in the past. And so anyway, I started thinking about what would I have said to myself? What have I done in the past or felt or whatever that I could have done differently? Now, don't get me wrong. I am not someone who believes very much in regrets, because regretting things doesn't change anything. That thing from the past still didn't go the way you wanted it to. It still hurts. You still have to heal from that. So regretting it doesn't change anything. Instead, we should accept what happened, maybe try and fix it if we literally can, or move on from it. That's all we can do. So I do not believe in regrets. Let me just say that from the beginning. And also, I don't think that there's any point in dwelling on the past. There's no point in saying, if I'd done that, if only I'd done that, things would be better if I'd done that. That doesn't help you. It's not comforting, it's not helpful at all. Instead, all we can do is be here in the now and make decisions from a place of knowledge with what happened and move forwards and hopefully make better decisions in the future. So keep that in mind for everything that I'm about to say. So here are 15 things, I'll try and quickly go through them, 15 pieces of advice that I would give to my younger self. Now I'm thinking about, like, you know, 10 years ago, so between the ages of 15 to 25, what would I tell my younger self? So the first one is to look for other friends. You don't belong with them. Now, let me give you that a bit of context real quickly. When I was beginning senior school, so at the age of 11, 12, I was kind of not in the right friendship group. I followed one girl from my same primary school because she's the only person I knew, and she had a really loud personality, one of them popular girls, naturally beautiful, really charismatic. She walked into a room and you knew she was there. And then bring along me, quiet little old me, I was kind of her shadow, and I let myself stay in her shadow for way too long. Now, this is not to say that she was a bad person. She had some kind of mean tendencies at times, but she wasn't a bad person. She struggled with a lot of things within herself, which obviously as an adult, I can see that now. But I would have done myself a lot of justice to have looked for friends that were more like me, to have found that natural place of belonging rather than being in the shadow of somebody who was completely unlike me and being friends with people who she was friends with, people who were like her, not like me. For example, I liked anime, I liked reading, I liked writing, I liked staying at home, but she liked makeup and gossip and reality TV and drinking in parks and talking about boys, and that wasn't me. And so if I had found the right friendship group earlier, I might have not suffered with so much social anxiety, for one, and I might have found a place of belonging. And of course, belonging gives us self-worth. We know that we're worthy when we feel like we're just loved and understood and accepted as we are. And I didn't feel that through my formative years as a teenager. So if I could give myself advice, I would have said, try and find the right friends sooner. I did move on to my geeky group of friends later on in high school. I'm American now. In senior school, about when I was about 16, but it was kind of too late. We had 1 year together and that was it, and then we all moved off to different colleges and then off to different universities. So that was a real shame. I could have had stronger connections, stronger values within myself and friendship groups if I'd made that decision. The next one is to let your natural hair fly and learn how to look after it, because I have only just recently started looking after my natural hair. I did let it out naturally sometimes about when I was about 16, but for a long time I just straightened it or brushed it out and plaited it. I didn't do anything to it. I didn't know what products to use. I didn't know what type of hair I had. I didn't know how to look after my curls, basically, and that has affected the texture of my hair, the moisture of my hair. It's dry and brittle sometimes. Of course, it's not as curly and beautiful as it could be. My hair doesn't grow very long because it's been, you know, burnt at the ends for so many years. And imagine if I'd looked after it sooner, I could have a luscious head of curls, a big mane on my head. That would be so amazing. You see these pictures on like Pinterest and Instagram, and I want that my hair to be like that. And it could have been like that if I'd looked after it sooner. But hopefully I'm learning from that mistake and starting to look after it now. And who knows, maybe 10 years from now, I'll look back and have a luscious head of hair. We can only hope. So the third one is, don't let yourself be the token black friend. Now, I won't go into this one too much because this is not the type of podcast for it, but I was kind of the token black friend in my friendship group, and I took a lot of semi-racist jokes. They weren't obviously racist. My friends weren't offensive people. They weren't prejudiced, but they said comments that I just laughed at and let slide. I just let them be a thing. But really, I should have stood up for myself and said, no, this, I'm not the token black friend here. I'm not going to take all of these black jokes that you're making. You know, you might find it funny, but that's not what I'm here to be. And for a lot of the time in my friendship group, the only time that we ever had a laugh and a joke was at my expense and about my race, you know, stereotypes of my race. So that wasn't fair, that wasn't right. And I hope that I wish that I could have stuck up for myself a bit more and said, hey, you've crossed the line here, let's not go there. The next one is to reread Harry Potter. So I was introduced to Harry Potter at a young age. I was, I think, in like year four, so about like, you know, 8, 9 or something when I first read it, because my teacher read it to our whole class and my mum got me the book so that I could read along at home as well, and I absolutely loved it. That was the best thing ever. I'm so glad that my teacher did that for me because it's a very important part of who I am now. But what I failed to do was reread it again in my teenage years. I should have kept rereading it. Instead, I only reread it again, I think, maybe in my early adulthood. And then now again, more and more. But if I'd read it when I was a teenager a bit more, rather than just relying on the films, then I would remember more about the books. But my knowledge of Harry Potter mostly comes from the films. And I know that it's not about comparison, but sometimes I compare myself to other fans and I'm like, oh, I wish I remembered more about the books instead of being able to quote all the lines from the films. Because obviously there's so much more depth, so much more wonder and magic in the books. I absolutely adore reading them now. I just wish that I'd read them a bit more before so I could remember them a bit more. The number five is to just read in general more, sooner, faster, harder, all of the above. I am somebody who loves to read now. I will read books back to back. I'll read them really fast if I'm into it. I'll bring a book with me wherever I go. I have Kindle books, I have audiobooks, I have secondhand books, hardback, paperback, all of the above. I don't mind how I read a book. I just like reading books. But I was kind of late to the game on that one again. And it's really hard to admit that as a writer, because writers are supposed to be readers, of course, you know. You hear an author speak and they say, oh, ever since I was 4 years old, I've been reading books. Ever since I was 4 years old, I've been creating worlds from the books that I read. And that wasn't me. And I kind of feel a sense of shame from that, to be honest. But I was late to reading. I did read when I was younger, but not much at all. And it's only later in adulthood that I made it a goal. And even then, that goal was very, very slow. I found it kind of hard. It took me like 6 months to read one book. And that feels really sad, because obviously my to read list is really long now, because there's so many books that I just haven't read and so many more great books are published every single year. So I feel very far behind in terms of the books that I should have read, the books that I want to read. And that kind of makes me doubt myself as a writer sometimes, because it's like, I would be so much better as a writer if I had read more, because obviously a writer becomes better the more they read. That's just a fact. So Yeah, if I could speak to my younger self, one of the things I'd definitely say is to pick up a book to read, Shana, read, read, read. Number six is to write more widely. So because I grew up on like TV, that's what kind of, I think, sparked my writing. I grew up watching like fantasy TV and anime and, you know, cartoons. I loved those things. I still love them now. I think that sparked my writing, and that's why I'm a fantasy writer. Definitely things like Harry Potter inspired that, and later in my later years, it's things like Game of Thrones. But I wish that I had written different things sooner, that I'd allowed myself to write in different genres, different mediums, all different ways sooner, so then I could find my voice a bit more rather than only writing fantasy. And again, it kind of twists and turns into the reading thing. If I'd read different types of books, I probably would have wrote different kinds of books as well. So they're definitely things that I would say to my younger self that I wish that I'd done. The next one's a bit of a hard one. Number seven is that I wish I could tell myself not to study psychology at university. Now, that's a weird one, but for me, it was a toss-up between studying psychology and studying English. At one point, I did pick joint honours, like combined honours of psychology and English, but that ended up not happening because I dropped out of university, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I wish that I'd just chosen English. I wanted to be a writer. Why didn't I choose English? If I chose English sooner, I probably would have stayed on the course for longer because it made more sense to me. Whereas I chose psychology because I thought, oh, it's probably more practical career-wise. I can make money from it, you know, being a psychiatrist. Don't get me wrong, I loved studying psychology and I'm glad that I had that knowledge because it very much informs my podcast, it informs my self-development, it informs my mental health and understanding of myself and others, like my blog and my everything, you know. It's really important to me to have studied psychology. I love that, but I wish I hadn't done it at university level. I can't help escape the feeling that if I'd studied English, I would have had a degree by now. And that kind of moves me into my second one, which is number eight, don't move away for university. So as I say, the first time I dropped out of university, I dropped out within a week because I had moved away from home. And I was obviously not ready to do that because I had a massive breakdown, a massive panic attack and came home. So if I chose to study English and to study English at a local university, commuting from home, I really do believe that I would have a degree now because I would have been comfortable at home. I wouldn't have that fear, that anxiety, that worry that I was in the wrong place. And I would have studied English, something that is dear to me, to write and to read, obviously a thing that I love still now. So I really do think that I probably would have a degree now if I chose to do that. But of course, ifs, buts, I don't know. Number nine is to wait for love. It's coming. I used to compare myself to my friends so much. Like I say, growing up with the kind of wrong friendship group, I had mixed with the popular crowd. I was like in with the popular gang and they were all gorgeous blonde-haired blue-eyed girls, so charismatic and funny and amazing popular girls. And obviously I felt like the ugly friend. I felt like the outsider. I didn't feel like I fit in with them. And this is nothing against them at all. They were just themselves. There's nothing wrong with them. And I still speak to them now, to this day. But I couldn't help but compare myself to them and feel like I was ugly, feel like I was unlovable. The boys never looked at me. They never gave me the time of day like they did with them. And that was really hard. And I wish that I could say to myself that, one, you're very beautiful. You are going to be loved. You are worthy of love. And two, that to wait, that you don't need to rush, that just because your friends had lost their virginity doesn't mean that you need to. Just because your friends were seen as beautiful and had a long list of boys that they'd dated doesn't mean that you need to. I'm fine with the fact now that I've only had one real serious relationship because he loves me and I love him and we've been together for 5 years now. We live together, we have a dog together, and hopefully he's going to be my end game. But I would say to my younger self that you are worthy, you are perfect and fine just as you are. There's nothing to change, there's nothing to compare. Just wait, the love of your life is coming. Number 10 is to cook and eat more foods sooner. So I used to be a fussy eater. That's what I was called, a fussy eater. I would mostly only eat chicken nuggets and chips and pizza and hot dogs, and that's it basically. And coming from like a Jamaican family, like on my mom's side, we'd go over and they would have rice and peas and jerk chicken and fried dumplings and ackee and fish and all that. And I just didn't eat it at all. And I remember one of my relatives saying to me, "You're not a real Jamaican," because I didn't eat those foods. And that really stung, and I really hated that. I hated the fact that my cousins used to laugh at me for eating tomato soup instead of eating what they were eating. I grew up as a fussy eater, and I felt very embarrassed and ashamed of myself. And then my social anxiety came from that as well. My social anxiety came from a lot of things, as I've said before, but it kind of worked. It was interwoven with the food thing. So, like, one of my biggest social anxiety triggers was getting invited to a restaurant. I would go if I really had to go, but I wouldn't eat the food because I was so sick, or I just wouldn't go, I would cancel. So hopefully, like, if I could speak to my old self, I would say that I'm sorry you feel this way. Don't worry, you're not going to be this way forever, firstly. And I kind of want to cry now thinking about it, because I know how much it hurt me back then to struggle with food, to not be able to eat what everyone else was eating, to compare myself to everybody, and to not enjoy restaurants. But now, I eat so many different foods, and I love trying new foods. I love going to a restaurant. I feel not 100% comfortable doing it because obviously the social anxiety is still there in the background, but I have moved forward so much, so much over the years. And I wish, if I could give myself advice, I would say, hey, you're going to be all right. Don't listen to anybody else. But hey, why don't we try this recipe for ourselves? Because I think one of my biggest issues was that I didn't like the way other people cooked. And that when you have your own hands in the food, you're doing it yourself, there's a different appreciation for it, and you get to do it your way. And that really helped me to enjoy foods now. And so, if I could speak to my younger self, it would be really great if I could hold her hands and tell her it's going to be okay, and also get her to cook her own food and start to eat different foods a lot sooner. The next one is a big one, a bit of a scary one to admit, but I shall say it anyway. So, number 11 is don't publish your books. So this is controversial for me in a way, because like when I was reading Sacred Powers this month, I had to list the best decisions I've ever made and the worst decisions I've ever made in my life. And funnily enough, I put publishing on the list for both of them, because on the one hand, it made me who I am. I love being known as an author. I worked hard on those books and I was proud of them, and they are good quality for the age and ability that I had at the time. It helped me to get jobs and to stand out from the crowd. Those books are a part of me. There will always be something that I'm glad that I did. However, it also kind of stifled my creativity. Everything I write now has become about publishing. I can't undo that urge, that thought that every book that I'm writing is going to be published, that should be published. I feel like I'm a better writer now. And if I was to now read my old work, I'd probably cringe at it. Because 18 is very young to publish your first book. And even then, republishing them at 21, 22 was still so young. I think if I had waited, if I weren't an author now, I don't know, things might be different. I might be writing for the love and the growth and the self-discovery and the fun of it instead of, writing to publish. I really do miss writing with that freedom, that abandon. And so, of course, I can't unpublish those books. Well, I can literally take them off Amazon, but it doesn't change the fact that I once had published books out there. And like I say, I'm very weird about this, because on the one hand, I'm very glad that I did it, but on the other hand, I can't help but wonder what my life would be like if I hadn't done that. I don't know. So number 12 is to stop comparing yourself to your friends. So I won't go into this one too much because I've already spoke about it, but I used to compare myself to my friends who were smarter than me, compare myself to my friends who were more beautiful than me, who had dated more boys than me, who knew more about TV shows than me, who, played video games better than me or were faster than me, all these kinds of things. And it's just it's ridiculous. It's not right. And even now, as I'm older, I still compare myself to my friends. My friends have degrees and I don't. And so I naturally feel like I'm less than compared to them. And my friends have sometimes, like, you know, some of them have traveled more than I have. And so I compare myself to them. They have better Instagrams than I have, or, you know, all these different silly things. And you can't help but compare yourself. And definitely with the culture of social media, it's natural to compare yourself. But it's wrong. It's not fair. We're all worthy. We're all amazing. And I know that I am definitely... I don't need to compare myself, so I wish that I could tell myself younger, at a younger age, to stop comparing, and hopefully that would have had a ripple effect and ended up in having more self-confidence now, because I did less of the comparison game back then. Number 13 is, you won't die from a bad grade, or a bronze medal, or a kiss gone wrong, or an ignored text, or a chapter written poorly, or any of it. You are allowed to make mistakes. You are allowed to be imperfect. You are allowed to not be the best. You are allowed to lose. You are going to fail. I think growing up as a kind of gold medal winner, I didn't lose very often. I was very comfortable with being the winner, and I knew I was going to be the winner all the time. And then when I did start to lose, I think it hit me harder because I'd had such a long time of success. And so I think it's very important when we're young to experience loss, to experience failure, to experience mistakes, and to dust ourselves off and get back up. But instead, if you're somebody who grows up thinking you're entitled to success, that you are deserving of it and you're going to get it no matter what happens, that's a really negative thing to carry with you, because that's not life, sister. That's not how it works. People lose, people fail. People get it wrong sometimes. You will get it wrong sometimes. You will get it wrong a lot of times, and that's all right. Number 14 is to never stop enjoying the play and the activity. Like I say, I used to be a gold medal winner, so I wish that I could tell myself to keep running, to keep jumping, to keep performing. Even if I'd never kept up with the literal athletics or GCSE PE like I'd done before, I wish that I hadn't stopped being an active person, that I still went to the gym or still went for jogs or still did classes, you know. I wish I'd done something, because it's so much harder to pick those things up when you've had such a long break from them. It's so much harder to run when you haven't ran in a long time. I did my first jog in about 6 months this week, and my God, it killed me. But if I'd kept it up consistently, it wouldn't hurt as much. So it's so much harder to start something than stop it, start it, stop it, start it, stop it. Instead, if we are consistent, we keep it up, even in a small amount, it goes a long way. So I wish I could say to my younger self to be consistent, to keep it up, and to keep it up with my creativity and my freedom and my enjoyment of play as well, because I take life a little too seriously now, and I really wish that I'd say to myself, keep that lightheartedness, keep that fun, that free, that abandonment, to run with your arms flailing in the air, you know, like how Phoebe does on Friends when she's next to Rachel. I wish I could run like Phoebe and just let things go and stop being so serious. And so my last one, number 15, ties into one I've already spoke about really, is you're not perfect. You don't need to be perfect. Stop seeking perfection. And most of all, stop trying to prove yourself to everyone. This is a big one for me even now, because I always try to prove myself. I feel like I'm hustling for self-worth, like how Brené Brown puts it. And this is not real belonging. This is trying to fit in. People who love you and accept you and appreciate you for who you are will see that without you having to prove it, without you having to get a list together and a manuscript together of all the reasons why they should accept you. Instead, acceptance comes from within, self-love, self-compassion, self-confidence, all of that. But also, the right people are coming into your life. The right people will see you for as you are, and you won't need to prove yourself in any way. So I wish that I could say to my old self, and to myself every day, to be honest, stop trying to prove yourself to other people. And when you're on social media, you kind of try and prove yourself to other people. You try to say, look at my life, it's so beautiful. Look at me, I travel. Look at me, I exercise. Look at me, I can do yoga. Look at me, I can write a story. All of these different things. And I'm so glad that I stopped doing social media this year. I still go on it sometimes, but I'm not on it as actively, and I don't have the apps on my phone, because it is so much better for your mental health to distance yourself from that constant seeking of validation, that constant instant gratification. You don't need it. It's toxic. And we do it so mindlessly. Instead, we need to be mindful about what we're doing, about what we're consuming, about what we're seeing, and, you know, how it's affecting us. Be intentional about what you're doing and why you're doing it. Are you authentically posting? Are you scrolling with awareness? If not, I really think you shouldn't do it. That's just my personal opinion, but yeah. My last one was that you are not perfect, Shana. You don't need to be perfect, and you don't need to prove that you're worthy to anyone. So there you have it, guys. That's my 15 pieces of advice that I would give my younger self. Does any of it resonate with you? If so, let me know. Check out my website, srcrawford.co.uk, and I'll speak to you next week. Bye.